Hey everybody, this is Michael Sweet of Striper.
This is Sam Cooke.
This is Meg White from the White Stripes.
This is Robin Zander from Cheap Trick.
This is Leanne Rimes, and you're listening to The Sounds of Christmas
Podcast.
Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to The Sounds of Christmas Podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. I'm very excited to have Michael Sweet from Striper on the Sounds of Christmas podcast today. Hi, Michael.
What is going on? This is about as casual as you get me these days.
Very excited that we finally got a Striper Christmas album, and I want to dive into that in just a moment. But first, I want to ask, Striper's been around for a while, and you and your big brother made this band 40 years ago, and at the time, there weren't any Christian rock bands. At least there weren't in the mainstream. Did anybody ever try and talk you guys out of doing that?
No, quite the opposite. Everyone tried to talk us into doing it. Everybody was so supportive. The only resistance we got was from some people in the industry and some fans that weren't fans of the band. People that were fans of metal, but they didn't like us. And we still experience that. I go to my Facebook page and we release an album and 90% of the comments are people saying, we love it. God bless you guys. So happy you did this. And then 10% are people coming in there saying, you guys suck. And I'm like, what is this? Are we in like kindergarten here? And apparently so for some people. But yeah, we didn't get that kind of resistance back then from our peers or from people in the industry. Certainly not people within our camp. We got nothing but encouragement, and we knew what we were supposed to do, and we did it, and they encouraged us to do so.
You guys were trailblazers. There really wasn't. I mean, I'm sure that there were bands out that were trying to do what you were trying to do, but you really broke through. Was there a point where you sort of realized that you had done that?
Well, I mean, first of all, we never really set out to do that. We never really thought about that. Like, let's break through or cross over or be the first to do this or that. We didn't think like that. We just wanted to play music and go out and do what we love to do, you know, and that's our calling. And God's given us those abilities and talents, and we wanted to use them for his glory. But I'll tell you what, the fact that we did that somehow, oddly enough, is pretty amazing and miraculous, really. Why in the world would a Christian band singing about Jesus beat out Bon Jovi and Motley Crue on MTV? I mean, how does that happen in the real world? I have no idea. Other than the fact that, first, number one, God's a very powerful God and can do anything. Number two, our fans called in and requested us. And I guess we had more fans than those guys at the time calling in and requesting. I have no idea. But man, back in the day, I remember bands like Sweet Comfort Band. I listened to those guys a lot when I was young, in church, playing on the music/worship team. And then you had bands that came on the scene like Rez Band, a blues band based out of Illinois. And then you had obviously Petra, but they weren't metal bands. They were just kind of like rock, blues kind of thing. Style-wise, and then there came along Striper, and we kind of just blew the doors off the hinges with a completely different style of music, a different look, you name it. Everything was so different, and I think it shocked a lot of people in a good way and shocked a lot of people in a bad way. But here we are, 40, gosh, we formed in 83, late 83. It came out with our first album in 84, so if you count the 83 time, we're going into 26. We're moving into, at some point, a 43-year history here. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that's amazing. Most bands don't make it that long.
No. And we did have our time away from the spotlight where we disbanded. We went our separate ways from 92 roughly to 03. And that's when we came together and toured, did what we called the Celebration Tour in 03, and then released our first new era Striper album in 05. But think of what we could have done if we had stayed together. We probably would have another, you know, certainly, I would think, six, seven, eight albums under our belt, maybe more.
Was it ever tough doing this with your brother? I mean, the history of rock has so many bands that had brothers that they couldn't handle it. Oasis, the Kinks, even Dire Straits. Was that ever a problem? It doesn't seem on the outside like it was.
Well, I mean, there's always going to be some sort of problems when you're in a band with your siblings. It's that thing that siblings have, you know. The love, and I don't want to say hate, but you know, you love them, but you no one can drive you crazy like your family, right? I think we can all relate to that in some ways, at one way or another. But I remember back in the day, my brother didn't really want to audition me. This is back when I was very young. I was like 13 years old, 12, almost 13. And he was looking for a singer. And I was just a little kid, you know, for the most part. And my dad kept encouraging him to audition me. And Rob didn't want to do it. And I understand it. But I remember, you know, we came pretty close to me not being a part of the band. Or at least what became Striper. Back then, we were called Aftermath and Firestorm. And then Rocks, then Rocks Regime, then Striper. But I mean, I would have started my own band. I mean, music's in my blood. I can't escape that. And I'm sure eventually, once I matured and grew up a little bit more, I would have started my own band. Who knows what that would have been like. But, you know, it's really cool that Rob auditioned me and it worked out. And here we are. The rest is history, as they say. But, you know, we've had our differences over the years, but I mean, he's my brother and I love him and I hope that he loves me. And because of the fact that we're brothers, there's this bond unlike any other that we have.
That's terrific. And as far as Christmas music goes, because that's what everybody is listening to this for, I think it was on your first album that you had the Reason for the Season, wasn't it?
Well, what it was is we recorded the Yellow and Black Attack as a 6-song EP. That came out in 84, July of 84. And then we went and we recorded. We thought it'd be great to have a Christmas single. And we recorded Reason for the Season and Winter Wonderland. We released those as a single. And then we eventually remixed the Yellow and Black Attack and added those songs, added Reason for the Season and My Love I'll Always Show in its ballad form to that album. And it became an 8-song re-release. So yeah, we never did a Christmas album. Everyone asked us for that for years, year after year. And for whatever reason, we just weren't able to make it happen until now. So we're thrilled that we are looking at and holding a Christmas album and it's become reality.
And my apologies for asking you a question that everybody has probably been asking you. But we've all been thinking about this for 6 months since, about 6 months, since the first single came out for Christmas in July, Still the Light, and the big announcement came that Striper had a Christmas album on the way, and everybody is glad we finally got the Christmas album, but also, what took so long?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think I can only say that, and I think I'm pretty accurate with this statement, we just didn't have the time and we didn't make the time. We could have just said, all right, you know, that's it. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, certainly 40 years ago, but we didn't. We were so caught up in touring and releasing new studio albums and whatnot that we just didn't take the time to make it happen until this year. And I just kind of, to be perfectly honest, I said, all right, that's it. I had had enough of talking about it. I'm one of those guys. My personality is to get it done. Stop talking about it. Go do it. You know, that's something that is a pet peeve of mine when people talk about something for 20 years and we're guilty of it. Just go do it. Make it happen. And we finally made it happen. And here we are. We have a Christmas album.
The greatest gift of all is the album. And it's, I think, exactly half originals and half covers. And the two songs I've already mentioned, Reason for the Season and Winter Wonderland, those are both on that, just remade, redone.
Exactly. Yeah, five traditionals and five originals. And I thought that would be cool to do. You know, instead of doing an album of all traditionals, which in my opinion can sometimes be a little monotonous, because, you know, how many covers can you have of some of these Christmas songs? A lot. And me personally, I'm the kind of guy, if I buy a Christmas album, I like to hear a Christmas original or two or three. You know, I like to hear some new songs that are hopefully going to go on to become traditional songs at some point. And the reason why we chose some of these traditionals as well was because they weren't covered as much. Songs like Go Tell It on the Mountain. There's not as many covers of that as there are maybe Winter Wonderland or Silent Night. You know what I mean? So I thought that would be cool to kind of throw in some songs that not everyone does. And then it was important to do the originals and make those sound like just the standard Stryper album. Those are songs you can listen to any time of the year. They don't sound like Christmas songs necessarily, but they are.
Yeah, when I first heard Still the Light, I wasn't sure that I had the right song. This is the Christmas song? This sounds like this could be on any Stryper album.
Exactly. And, you know, that's the thing. It's sad to me sometimes to hear people say, and they said it about this album, we're not listening until after Thanksgiving. And I'm thinking, well, that's weird. Why? Well, why wouldn't you want to listen to new music before Thanksgiving? Even if it's a Christmas album, these songs aren't necessarily stamped with Christmas, like Still the Light. It doesn't sound like a Christmas song. You know, the only reason why maybe Heaven Came or The Greatest Gift of All sound like Christmas songs is because we added some bells. I mean, you take the bells away and they don't sound anything like a Christmas song. They could have gone on No More Hell to Pay or even To Hell with the Devil, for that matter.
People get on this kick about when it's okay to listen to Christmas music, and they're acting like it's something new that it's available early. Elvis and Frank Sinatra both released Christmas albums in October, and that was 70 years ago?
Yeah. I don't understand the mentality, but, you know, I respect it. If someone feels that way, so be it. And then there's the flip side of that coin of the minute Christmas is done, they won't listen to another Christmas song.
Yeah.
So does that mean nobody's going to listen to, well, some people aren't going to listen to Still the Light or The Greatest Gift of All in January or March? And that was the purpose of the album, is to make it so it's a Christmas album, but it's a Christmas album you can listen to year round.
The three singles that are out, Still the Light, Winter Wonderland, and On This Holy Night, are the only ones that are streaming.
Yes.
For the rest, you need to go somewhere where you can get the physical CD. What was the reasoning behind doing that?
Well, look, I'm not a label guy. You know, I'm a musician. Sometimes I don't completely comprehend or understand the thinking behind certain decisions. But the label was adamant about that, and I get it. They wanted to hold off and not put everything on Spotify streaming platforms. They felt that next year we'd be able to release another song, Silent Night or whatever, to streaming, and it would kind of still have some freshness to it. It wouldn't be stale and being played all year long. And I get that. Unfortunately, with that comes a little confusion sometimes. Some people get upset and downright angry because that's all they do is streaming. And it's not available on Apple Music or Spotify or any of the streaming platforms. Also, we have some confusion on iTunes. It's really strange. I don't know what's going on, but there's a glitch where if you put in Stryper and that the name of this album, you'll only see three songs to download. But if you do a deep dive and you change up the order and put in like greatest gift of all and scroll down and search for it, you'll find it. And it's all 10 songs. So it's really bizarre. I don't know what the deal is with that, but it is available for download as well.
And it's not just the physical CD that people can get. You guys have a variety of vinyl, which is really cool and great for gifts for fans too.
We do. We have different versions of the vinyl. The Striper store has one version or two. Frontiers has a few different versions, and then other companies have their own version, you know. It's really, really cool. I love it. So there's different multiple versions of the album out there. And it's check it out, pick it up. It's going to be one you're really going to enjoy at this time of year, but also anytime throughout the year.
And what I really like about it is that I don't have to pick and choose which one I'm going to get based on which songs are on there. Because sometimes the label like to play those games where, well, if you go to this store, you get this plus a bonus song. And it's only available on the Red Splatter album. But if you want the Green Spiral or you want the Translucent or whatever, you get this song. And you guys didn't do that. And I'm really glad about that.
Yeah, the only thing we did remotely close to that is, and we always do this, it's just the thing that we have to do, is a Japan bonus track. So the album, the Japanese version of the album, will have a remix of Joy to the World, two versions of that song.
Wasn't Winter Wonderland originally back in the 80s, wasn't that a Japan bonus track?
It could have been. It may very well have been on some sort of single or album or something of that sort. So, and we did that kind of stuff a lot. I know even songs like Together as One was a bonus track on this album, or, you know, there's a lot of that. That's why there's a lot of singles available, picture disc, all kinds of stuff like that back in the day. Oh, yeah.
Speaking of Winter Wonderland, I remember when that came out at the beginning, there's a little good-natured talk over the drums at the beginning, kind of like what Springsteen did at the beginning of Santa Claus is Coming to Town,
yep,
that you guys were having some fun, and it's not on the new version. Was that a conscious choice to skip that this time around?
100%. That was a conscious choice and intentional. We just felt, specifically me and the guys agreed, we felt that would be kind of weird to try to pull off. Yeah, because back then we all talked like this, hey, guys, help me out. Now it'd be like, hey, guys, help me out. I got, you know, it just, it could turn into a bit of a disaster or even borderline corny very quickly. And we didn't want to go there, so we didn't do it. We just kind of cut that part out. But we stuck to the original version in every other sense of the word.
Yeah, the arrangement's the same. The drums are amazing on Winter Wonderland.
Oh, good, good.
And the way it ends, it's very kind of Elvis-y, the way it sort of slows down and it's a little bluesy at the very end.
Yep. And we did, and there's a reason for that, because we're huge Elvis fans. And we pulled right from Elvis on the original version. To take on a faith. Yeah, that whole thing. That's what Elvis did on a lot of songs. And not a lot of people know this, but if you go back and listen to our version of Battle Hymn of the Republic, you'll hear some Elvis flavors on that as well. Because we loved Elvis's version, and I think we pulled from that a little bit too.
Very cool. On This Holy Night came out on Halloween, which is really kind of fitting because there's a big mood there on that song, and the video is kind of Halloween-y too, and I'm guessing that was all intentional.
It was. I mean, my vision, and when I explained it to everybody, they were like on board with it and said, oh yeah, absolutely, was because of the sound of the music, it seemed fitting to release that on Halloween. It's kind of creepy sounding. Da-da-da, ooh, you know, the vocals and the guitars and everything's kind of like, whoa. Kind of Black Sabbath sounding, and
yeah,
a little borderline creepy and eerie. And so we felt like, okay, let's get this one out on Halloween. And that being the case, we wanted to put in some of the Halloween imagery, tying into Christmas and the meaning behind the song, of how basically the whole marketing scheme, and it's all about how much product we can sell and let's get it out. So we, you know, you go to Home Depot and you got Halloween stuff in, you know, August, or maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but it's out way before it maybe should be. Same goes for Christmas stuff. The minute we get past Halloween, boom, you see the Christmas stuff and the Thanksgiving stuff, which is fine, but it's kind of a marketing scheme. It's all about marketing and selling and profiting, and that's not what Christmas is about, nor should it be. And we're trying to remind people, like, look, let's get back to what it's all about, as the song Reason for the Season says. It's about Christ. It's about, you're celebrating the birth of Christ. It's not about going in debt. It's not about buying cars and Mercedes-Benz with red bows wrapped around them for people and then paying on that for 40 years. It's not about that. It's about the birth of Christ. Let's celebrate that. Take a step back and you know, realize and understand and remember the true meaning of Christmas.
Was it tough to go back, go into the studio April or May when you were recording this and get into that sort of holiday spirit to record these songs?
Not really. We wound up going in and doing some things to make it more fun and get us all in the spirit. Like, we wore our Christmas pajamas. I had a pair of Grinch pajamas that I wore. We all did that. We all wore Christmas pajamas. We had Christmas, when you went to the bathroom in the studio, the minute you'd open the door, Christmas music would start playing. Old classics, newer Christmas music, you name it. And as you're going to the bathroom, you're listening to Christmas music. And then when you go back into the studio, we had a big widescreen TV and we had the movie Elf running 24/7 without the volume. Nice. And that was our way of kind of getting into that spirit. You know, I think we made some eggnog drinks and, you know, we did our best to kind of make it feel like it was Christmas.
Well, and it comes across when I listen to On This Holy Night, it doesn't sound like you're phoning it in.
Yeah.
It sounds like you guys are there. And I get hundreds of songs sent to me every year for the Sounds of Christmas station. And I had one a few years ago from an 80s artist that I don't think has had any hits since maybe the early 90s. And it was great to see something new from them.
Yeah.
And it was Rocking Around the Christmas Tree. And if I didn't know who it was, I wouldn't have been able to tell. Could have been anybody. Yeah. It was a paint by numbers.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's just.
Yeah. And without being mean spirited, that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
People can sense that if it's real or not.
Yeah.
Fans especially can sense that. And if it's not real, they may not even know why they don't want to buy it or why they don't want to play it, but they don't, for whatever reason. Maybe because it's just not great, or it was phoned in, as you put it. We really go out of our way to never, ever do that. We don't phone in anything. If we can't do it the right way, we will not do it. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, even like on Winter Wonderland, a lot of times I'll say that when I hear one of these songs that I believe the artist. And with Winter Wonderland, I believe you guys are doing this on purpose and you're having fun. When makes that shift near the end and it gets kind of bluesy and Santa Claus is back in town kind of feel, you guys are having fun and that comes across.
And it's all about that. And another important piece of that puzzle is to be in the studio with one another. Now, see, a lot of albums with bands are made remotely these days. I've made many of them that way with George Lynch and, you know, Tracy Guns, and, you know, where he does his tracks there and I do them here and, you know, everyone else does them in wherever. And, you know, that works. You can make a great album that way, but there's still always something missing. And what I think that is the camaraderie and the energy that comes from being together in the same room.
Yeah, and you really feel that on Winter Wonderland, especially, that really comes through. I was surprised of a track that's not on there, O Come All Ye Faithful. Didn't you guys do a version of that sometime in the last 25, 30 years, maybe more?
We did, actually, further back than that. We did that version around, like, 1988. And maybe it might have been 89, but I believe it was 88. It's right around the same time we were working with Michael Lloyd. And we went to his house and recorded that. And that was for a children's hospital compilation. And you know, we didn't want to recover everything we've done, you know, because if that were the case, we could have done some other things as well. My version of O Holy Night, or we talked about that, and I was like, let's not go there. You know, let's do something. Let's make this album a little more fresh and unique and make sure it has its own signature. And that's why we didn't do that.
Did this ever come across to you when you sing a song like O Holy Night or Silent Night? And there have been so many amazing performers that have done this song before. Do you ever think about that as, you know, that people are going to listen to this and comparisons will be made, whether intentional or not?
Of course, but in my opinion, it's really important to make it your own.
Yeah.
Like, you know, my version of that song, O Holy Night, it was really more of a, it was not a lot of money was put into it. I didn't have a lot of money. It was kind of a low budget process. But I wanted to make it my own. I recorded that with Kenny Lewis up in Middleton, Mass. And I brought in a choir from a local church to sing those holy, holy, you know, and man, we didn't pull any punches, and I wanted to have it to have a different groove, like a basically a swing to it, and just to do it different. No one's really ever done that kind of version, da 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 da, kind of a funk. It gets kind of funky even, and it was important for me to do something really different because so many people have covered that song more traditionally, and like the voice and the orchestration. I wanted to do something different, but I think that's important. If you're going to cover a song, make it your own.
Was there anything that you wanted for this album that for one reason or another didn't pan out, but might show up on Greatest Gift Volume 2?
Well, I mean, if anything were to happen down the road, I would say maybe we record an extra song or two and add those songs. 10 songs always feels a little, you know, a little short to me. But then again, if you go back to the old days, the 80s, that's how albums were made. There were 9 or 10 songs, rarely 11, back in the early 80s, mid 80s. So it fits into that standard. But I mean, I would say if we're going to do anything down the road, maybe add a song or two and remaster it and re-release it, maybe new artwork, new cover, something like that.
I know it's probably too late this year, but is it at least on your radar of doing a Striper Christmas tour?
Oh, yeah. I think we have to. We got to make that happen, and that would be great. And these songs, I think we could pull off the whole album easily. Some albums, it's not so easy to pull everything off. Certain songs are a little much, you know. We get a little crazy and carried away on some songs, like End of Days, for example, or The Final Battle. You know, drum-wise, and Rob's up there after 90 minutes of playing, trying to play these songs, and like, ugh. You know, it gets tough. And this album is easy to pull off, relatively.
Not quite related to this, but did I hear that there's a Striper documentary in the works?
There is. As a matter of fact, this entire week, and even on Thanksgiving, we had our director here at my house, and we were filming all week long. So I'm like, boy, I am spent from that. Talked out and just wiped out. But yes, we are making a documentary. It's been in the works for quite a while. We just interviewed Nuno Bettencourt while he was here. We got a lot of people that we've interviewed and kind of telling, sharing some stories and the impact Striper's music had on their lives. growing up or whatnot. And it's so cool. You know, guys like Chris Jericho, obviously, and so many people. Oh, my gosh. Brian Head Welch. I mean, a lot of people. And we want to get a few more. And we're going to go into editing, I would say, sometime early next year.
Okay. And we might see it maybe by the end of the year.
I hope so. I know this. We have a lot of footage. It's just going to take a long time to put it all together. But it's coming. And when it comes, it's going to be powerful. I think it's going to stand on its own. Unlike any rockumentary ever. Most rockumentaries, if not all, are pretty much from the band's perspective. They show the band and footage and interviews of the band and clips and articles, you know, which is cool. This one's not that. You'll see some of that, but this is more from the fan perspective and the people whose lives were changed, altered, inspired, encouraged by the music and the message. So it's very different. And I tell you, it's powerful. You sit there and watch this stuff and you're like, whoa, wow. I had no idea that their music impacted that guy, that girl. What? It's pretty cool.
Is this going to be in theaters? Going to be streaming? Do we know yet?
We're going to work hard on doing some sort of a deal with someone like a Netflix or a Hulu or a Prime or, you know, something. It'll have to speak for itself. I mean, I think it's real easy to say that. Yes, that's going to happen now, but that's not an easy task. But I think once people see it, the reel and eventually the documentary, it's going to be a no-brainer and a very easy thing to get these people on board, because it's different, man. It's cool and it's powerful, and it's not going to be like any other rockumentary you've ever seen.
I know sometimes when documentaries on singers or bands come out, there's a soundtrack and maybe an extra song or something new. Anything like that on tap for this one?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, we released to date 5 songs to Patreon, which is our, fan club.
Right.
It's a way for people to help us continue on and do what we got to do. And it's amazing. So we try to give back to them and offer special things there on our Patreon site account. And we've got 5 songs. We're going to do some more eventually. And maybe those songs will be part of the soundtrack. Maybe we'll go and record some new songs and make an album specific to the documentary. I don't know. But most certainly, to some degree, there will be new music with that documentary.
Very cool. Always great to have something to look forward to. Faith in Music Foundation. Is this something new? I only heard about it recently, but...
It is. We've been talking about it for years, my wife and myself, Lisa Champagne and myself. And basically, our dream has always been to help musicians who can't help themselves. This is a brutal business. The music world devours people. These kids come on the scene who have the talent and the abilities, but they don't have the finances, and they can't even buy guitar strings for the guitar. They can't afford to go in the studio. They can't afford to tour. They can't afford to whatever. And that's what Faith in Music is all about, to provide through grants ways to help these aspiring young musicians. And we've got the recording side and we've got the touring side. And it's all the most important part about it is people helping the cause and giving to the cause. We can't do it without, you know, donations and without money. But man, it's always been a dream of ours because we experienced it. And it's deflating when you can't follow your dreams and you've got so much to say and so much talent. And great songs and this and that, and you can't pursue it. A lot of these musicians get frustrated and they just go back to working a 9-to-5 and they never pursue their dreams. They kind of give it up sometimes. They get so discouraged and sell whatever gear they have and they just let it go. And that's heartbreaking. So that's why Faith in Music is here. And if people could check that out, it would be amazing.
Is there a link to that on your site or on the Striper site? Or
There's links on my site, Striper site, and it's faithinmusic.com. I think it's simple as that. faithinmusic.com, and everybody can read about it and check it out and see. And if you're a musician out there and you want to try to move forward in your dreams and what you're doing in life, you can fill out the application and apply, and maybe that'll work out. And we have to go through everything and make sure that it works for everyone involved,
Yeah, I'll put a link to that down in the show notes with a few other things. What's next for Michael Sweet and Striper? You guys taking a break?
I've got we're starting on a new album, so I wrote the music already. I got to write some of the lyrics, but all the music is for the most part done. And basically, on December 27th, which is what, a month from now?
Yeah, almost exactly.
Yeah, we go in the studio and we start. And we'll come out of the studio on, I think, the 13th. And then I've got some things to deal with health-wise. And we'll figure out vocals and whatnot and mixing. And that album definitely should come out next year. I would say it could be September, as early as September. It could be as late as November. But it's coming. And it's going to be really cool. A little different spin. A little more straight ahead. I don't want to say it's not grunge, but a little more grungy, it just kind of loose and dirty and raw and straight ahead and really cool stuff.
The new album, The Greatest Gift of All, sounds like Striper, but a little bit different. And that's just kind of a natural progression for bands to grow and change a little. Everything can't sound the same or it'd be just so boring.
No, you can't. As you grow older, and it's usually broken up, at least in my opinion, into decades. So back in the 80s, we had a certain sound. We stepped into the 90s, we had a different sound. I didn't particularly care for that sound as much, but we had a completely different sound. And then you get into the 2000s, totally different thing going on, right? And then as we got back to the 2010, that time frame, we kind of went full circle back to our roots and became more like that classic sound everyone seemed to want to hear. Now we're changing things up a little bit, getting a little heavier, a little darker, a little deeper, a little this or that. And I love it. And it keeps us fresh and we don't get as bored. And, if we did the same thing over and over again, I don't think we'd be around as long as we've been around. We'd lose interest.
I worked at a record store back in the 80s, and I remember we would get primarily two kinds of customers. One that would come in and say, oh, I hate the new Cars album because it sounds the same as everything they ever did. Or they would say, oh, I hate the new album by so-and-so because it doesn't sound like anything that I know.
Right.
I just thought, well, what do you want?
I mean, I think people kind of to some degree expect the same, especially when something comes out and it's so big and so popular. That applies to movies, books. They kind of want a repeat of what they just read or saw or heard. And if they don't get it, it's like, what? But I like change. I just don't like it. The thing I don't like, and I think bands have to be very careful doing, is completely alienating your fan base and doing something that's not you. If you're a rock band and then you, all of a sudden you're a rap band, or you're a rock heavy metal band and then all of a sudden you're a country band. It's like, now it does work on rare occasion, but usually not. It doesn't work. Because to me, it's all about being real and true to yourself and your roots. And when you just up and change everything, fans can pick up on that. And it's like, wait a minute here. I don't care for that personally, but maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I think if the next Striper album featured you on bagpipes, it's probably not really a Striper album.
Probably wouldn't be a good thing.
Right. What's the best way to keep up with you and the band?
Best way is on our socials. I'm very active. on socials, and striper.com, michaelsweet.com. Of course, those are the websites. Of course, Facebook pages. I have a Facebook page. Striper has one. Instagram. And I'm always on there posting something that is keeping fans in the loop or trying to make them laugh or think or update them or what have you. I'm very active on socials, and I think that's very important.
Great. I'll put some links to that down in the show notes as well, so anybody listening can scroll down there and find that and click on over and find you.
That is awesome.
It's been great talking to you. Thank you so much, Michael.
Buddy, thank you. Likewise, and you have a wonderful Christmas and a happy new year coming up. And we'll talk again, I'm sure, because there's a lot more coming. I got a new solo album coming out in April of next year, and Iconic, another band I'm with, and just a lot of stuff going on. The new Striper album next year. It's going to be a good year.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Okay, brother.
And thank you so much for listening, helping us share some Christmas spirit, and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I already told you how to listen to the station, and you're listening to the podcast now, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page that lists most, if not all, of the sites that stream the Sounds of Christmas podcast. So you can click that, then find your favorite, click on over, and then subscribe, and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again. And may you always believe in Santa Claus.